Welcome to Unlike-Minded, a sci-fi audio anthology.
Do You Part? By Paula Sevenbergen. Barb's screen was the only bright spot in the dim bedroom. Too bright, she feared, though there was little chance of it waking her husband, who lay inert next to her. Once in a while, she'd look over at Tom, at the rise and fall of his chest, then return to the message window on her laptop.
Tank.
I do not have a mullet. I didn't even know that term when I got this haircut.
Smiling, Barb typed a reply. Barb, just because you didn't know the word for it doesn't mean you don't have it. It's like a diagnosis. The response seemed clever just seconds ago, but now she worried that D word was too dark.
Tank, whatever you call it, you sure liked pulling it when my head was you know where.
Those words, juvenile as they were, sent a current through her. She hadn't felt anything you know where in so long. Again, she glanced at Tom, and his balding head turned away from her. He was under the covers, unlike her. It wasn't really their bed anymore. Still, Barb felt guilty engaging in whatever this was on her screen. She told herself at least she was exercising some restraint by not opting for video. After all, she could be staring at Tang's young, bulging torso and more right now instead of just imagining it. Barb, let's just say your hair isn't your best feature. You know what is. There was another reason this felt dirty. Not long ago, Barb had written a column criticizing others for engaging in similar online exchanges. In the 19 years she'd been writing for the newspaper, never had one of her op-ed pieces gotten so much attention. That was before her days had become so lonely. Lonely even though she technically wasn't alone.
Tank, is it my clavicle?
But now that she started messaging with Tank, everything felt more vibrant.
Tank, I'd like to lick your clavicle and every inch of your gorgeous breasts.
She couldn't deny that she felt, well, more alive. Barb, my nipples are so erect that I'm typing with them.
Tank, want to know what I'm typing with?
Barb laughed out loud, a genuine LOL. She hadn't laughed in so long. Someone's in better spirits, boomed a voice from the doorway, making Barb jump. Geraldine, she said, trying to reconcile her racing heart and hard nipples. I thought you left. Geraldine, a sturdy woman with blunt bangs and kind eyes, stood cradling an open box of disposable gloves. Sorry, didn't mean to scare you, she said. Suddenly, Tom squirmed beneath the sheet. His face turned toward them, and the plastic tube attached to his nostrils followed, making him look like a kind of pallid, trunked mammal. He'd always been a snorer before this machine, Barb had once mused Geraldine when she'd been desperate to make conversation. The woman stayed quiet as Tom turned his head yet again, settling back into his original position. I'll just drop these off in the kitchen and go, Geraldine whispered loudly. Unless you need anything else? Barb shook her head. Thanks, Geraldine. Say hi to your family. Barb liked to pretend Geraldine was a real friend and not someone she had hired. A slant of light from the still cracked door now lit a sliver of the bedroom. Barb scanned the room in a way she hadn't in a while, looking beyond the bed to a photo of her and Tom on the dresser. It was taken at their friend Snook's wedding reception the night Tom and Barb first fell in love for the second time. He refused to dance, so she did the Macarena with strangers after too much Prosecco. He watched her from the table with an expression of amusement and love. Mostly love. They dated back in high school, kissing and groping in a wood-paneled basement to Mazzy Star, vowing to love each other forever. They broke up at graduation. But 12 years later, there they were, seated next to each other in an overly air-conditioned ballroom thanks to Snook. Barb, who was dating a real a-hole at the time, immediately found comfort in Tom, this man who had known her childhood cat and had tasted her mom's goulash. Soon, Barb and Tom married and threw a reception of their own. "I hate to think I'll just end up with my high school boyfriend," sneered her niece with the smugness of someone not yet scarred by dating. After the cake cutting, Tom surprised Barb by doing a mutilated Macarena with a sheepish smile. She had never loved him more. But over time, the romance waned, as romance is wont to do. Their gaze turned from each other to their work. Making out gave way to home maintenance. They got iPhones, unaware how this would alter their lives. Then there were the miscarriages, causing both of them to be leery of her body. Sex became akin to changing the furnace filter, done dutifully and with trepidation. They pretended to be okay with this because it was easier and because there was still love.
Tank, you there?
Barb stared at the pulsing cursor on the screen. Finally, she typed, "Barb, I'm here."
"Tank, I thought I lost you."
"Barb, never."
"Tank, remember how hard you rode me after I got my tattoo?"
"Barb, yes."
"Tank, it wasn't even that big."
"Barb, neither was that tattoo."
"Tank, ha ha ha."
"Barb, you got my name and a heart on your chest. How could I not be turned on?"
"Tank, hard to believe that was a year ago."
The smile on Barb's face began to fade. "Barb, what year do you think this is?"
"Tank, 1999.
Barb and the cursor blinked at each other. Suddenly, her phone vibrated on the nightstand. A call from a number she didn't recognize. There were lots of them these days, and she no longer let them go to voicemail for screening. There wasn't time. "Barbara," said a jovial-sounding man on the other end when she answered. "Xander here from DW Intelligence." Barb closed the laptop, self-conscious. "Yes?" "Just wondered how your experience with the Raconteur 3000 is going so far." Now she really regretted talking about her nipples. "Are you monitoring me?" "We're monitoring the program, to a degree," said Xander. "But don't worry. Our monitors have no capability of feeling or judgment. At least not moral judgment. They just track engagement." Barb wasn't sure she believed what he was saying, or even understood it. "We want customers to be satisfied with their experience, especially you, Barbara, after your thoughtful article." "You mean critical article. We hope you now see the other side of using Raconteur." "The side that doesn't still work from people, you mean?" "Change is never easy," said Xander. "At least not for human beings." Barb looked over at her husband. "So unchanging." "But you're satisfied with the program so far?" Xander asked. Barb couldn't bring herself to say she was beyond satisfied. She couldn't tell Xander that it was the most stimulated she'd felt in years. "I have a question," she said instead. "Shoot," said Xander. "He said it was 1999. "Apologies for that. The program should not reference specific dates during an exchange. It won't happen again." "Oh, okay," said Barb, not used to such responsiveness. "But you're fine communicating with him as if it were 1999, yes? You chose the current and the past option." "I did," she said. "But isn't it more like the past and the current?" "Tomato, tomato," said Xander. Suddenly, Tom turned and his breathing tube came loose, hissing like a pissed snake. "Honey," said Barb, hanging up. Tom's eyes remained closed as Barb readjusted the tube's nasal prongs. Then she stroked his forehead, the deep lines as if trying to erase them. After a while, she scooched down and curled up beside him, then drifted off. The pings woke her a few hours later. Half dazed, she looked at Tom's breathing machine, the display its usual putty gray, before realizing it was her phone with yet another type of alert. Voice messages from her sister-in-law, Pam, saying her flight would arrive at noon. Barb wanted Pam to visit her brother again. Really, she did, but just thinking of Pam's cloaked criticisms and aggressive positivity made her tense. She gave up on going back to sleep and opened the laptop. The 1999 of Tank's last message was still there. She decided to experiment. Barb, how are you writing me? This technology didn't exist in 1999. Or doesn't.
Tank, there's a lot we're not privy to.
Barb, you aren't the kind of guy who'd say privy.
Tank, I'll correct that.
There was a subtle flash in the message window, almost imperceptible to the eye, before his next reply.
Tank, let's talk about how horny you get from swimming.
Barb almost noted the abrupt transition, but she decided she might like this next topic.
Tank, in Jenny Hoffman's shed, after getting out of her pool, how hot my body felt against your cool damn parts when you took down your bikini.
Barb felt herself redden, not because of the message's content, but because of the actual words. She remembered them. They were hers.
Tank, then there was the outdoor shower, the squealing and splashing of the others in the pool, the barking dogs, the neighbor's lawnmower, all drowning out our heavy breathing.
Barb closed her eyes as these details swirled through her head. She could see the scene so vividly she ached. And not just see it, but damn near feel it. The wetness and warmth. The sense of sheer abandon. It had been so long. But without warning, regret began to seep in. Barb, I haven't gone swimming much since those days.
Tank, why not?
Barb, too self-conscious to wear a swimsuit for one. Isn't that sad?
Tank, you're beautiful.
Barb wondered if she was breaching some code herself now, talking about the distant past like it was the distant past. Wasn't the point of this to be believably present? It was all so confusing. This application, life. Barb, I don't think I've felt as carefree since then.
Tank, not since last summer?
Of course, it hadn't been last summer. There'd been many summers since those days at Jenny Hoffman's pool. Decades of them.
Tank, I can't wait until we can be together every day. Forever.
The hope in those words, also familiar, now made Barb's eyes well up. She looked over at Tom. This time, he was looking back at her. At first, Barb thought she was seeing things, the tears skewering her vision. Tom? She hadn't seen his eyes in so long. Now his mouth opened too. He seemed to want to speak, but uttered nothing through his crusted lips. Barb crouched down. You want some water, hun? She asked, though he had the IV. Yes, that was there too, hiding under the sheet with the other things. She went to reach for the pitcher, but Tom's hand suddenly touched hers. Its roughness and weight were no longer the same, yet she still recognized the feel of it. He hadn't touched her in so long. Oh, Tom. His eyes seemed to plead. He didn't want her to leave. And so she stayed, gazing at him, holding his hand. I love you, said Barb, overwhelmed. And I know you love me, no matter what we said during that stupid fight before. Before the stroke, she didn't say. His eyes softened, their pleading ceasing. Then the light went out behind them. Before long, Geraldine was back, patting her shoulder and shutting off machines, filling out forms and making calls. Barb was still at Tom's bedside when the pastor came to say a prayer, and Pam entered with her optimistic orchid too late. Together, Barb and Pam watched as the men lifted Tom off the bed, causing his gown to slip off one side and exposing the inked heart on his chest. "I never liked that tattoo," Pam said between sniffles, getting in one last dig. Soon, Tom's body would be buried under the canopy of a sycamore. And later, Barb would return to work, covering topics she no longer felt passionate about. She would be contacted again by Xander from GW, telling her that in a mere month, the intelligence of their Raconteur 3000 program had improved by 46%. If they could just input more of her personal correspondence, emails and text, in addition to the letters from the 90s she had already shared, the Raconteur could provide an even more gratifying and lifelike experience. Perhaps you could even face out using his high school nickname and call him Tom, he gently suggested. Barb thought she might like that. And opt for the visual component as well. She might like that too. So she gave GW Intelligence everything they needed, because maybe some things in life were more important than privacy. "Isn't it incredible," said Xander as he installed her upgrade, "that death no longer has to do you part?" Barb agreed it was rather incredible. Of course, if you wish to continue enjoying Raconteur with all the future updates, we do ask that you publish a retraction, he added, using the gentle voice again. Eventually, Barb took back most of the criticisms she'd made of GW Intelligence in her column, even though their prose generators had replaced a couple of her colleagues and may one day replace her. But these things would happen anyway, she told herself. She could no more control that than control ending up under the sycamore someday. And so, Barb no longer felt guilty when, at the end of each increasingly tedious day, she would retreat to her bedroom for a little stimulation. She'd turn on her screen, and there he'd be, waiting in all his glory, her forever love.
This has been Unlike Minded, a sci-fi audio anthology.
Do You Part was written by Paula Sevenbergen and narrated by Benita Nall, with special guest narration by Austin Zazier. Unlike Minded is an August Year Round production, created, produced, and edited by Robbie Hine. We'd like to give a special thank you to everyone who has supported this independent podcast production. You can keep up to date and find more info about this podcast and others on Instagram at the handle AugustYearRoundProd or email us at AugustYearRound@gmail.com. And be sure to subscribe, leave a rating and review, and tune in next week for another episode of Unlike Minded. Thank you for listening.